Chapter 37. If they stick to their schedule, they're already headed back this way, Remy said. 4 or 5 minutes away at most. The presence of the patrol boat had dramatically changed the linchpin to their exit strategy. The raft. If they left it here, it would almost certainly be found and the alarm would be raised, and there was no time to find a place to stash it, which left only one option. They donned their backpacks, and then Sam found a pair of handholds in the rock face and held the raft steady as Remy used his shoulders as a step stool to the first spike. Once she had ascended high enough to make room for him, he flipped open his Swiss Army knife and slit the raft's side tube from bow to stern, then gripped the spike and pulled himself onto the face as the raft sank below him with a soft hissing sound. "Time?" Sam asked.
3 minutes, give or take, Remy replied, and started climbing.
They were halfway to the top when Sam heard the rumble of the outboard engines to their right. As had the raft's trolling motor, the tone of the patrol boat's engines suddenly changed, echoing through the arch.
"Remy, company's arrived," Sam muttered. "I've got a tunnel opening here," she replied. "It goes horizontally into the face, but I can't see how far."
"Any port in the storm. Just go."
"Right."
The gurgle of the boat's engine was directly below them now, skimming along the face. Sam looked down. While the boat itself was invisible in the fog, he could see the mist cleaving before it like smoke around an object in a wind tunnel. The spotlight popped and began playing over the cliff, zigzagging upward.
"I'm in,"
Remy whispered from above. Eyes alternating between the spikes above him and the rapidly ascending pool of light below him, Sam climbed the last few feet, then suddenly felt Remy's hand on his own. He coiled his legs beneath him and pushed off while simultaneously pulling with his arms. He rolled into the tunnel and jerked his legs inside as the spotlight hovered over the opening for a moment, then continued on. They lay huddled together in the darkness, Sam trying to calm his breath as they listened to the boat make its way through the arch and the engine noise finally faded.
"Is this the place?" Sam asked,
pushing himself up onto his elbows and looking around. The tunnel was roughly oval in shape, roughly 5 feet tall and 6 feet wide.
"I'd say so," Remy said, pointing.
Bolted to the ceiling at the mouth of the tunnel was a crisscross bulwark of thick, tar-covered oaken beams supported by vertical timbers bolted to the walls. Dangling from the center of the bulwark was a rusted block-and-tackle pulley system linked by thick hawser rope to a hand-crank winch affixed to the uprights. A pair of narrow-gauge rails sitting atop wooden cross-ties and crushed gravel ballast stretched into the darkness.
"Well, the winch isn't original, that's for sure," he said. "Unless, that is, Zaporozhian Cossack technology was way ahead of its time. See here, those bolts are precisely machined. This might go back to the Crimean War, but my guess is World War II. Just look at the mitered joints. This thing could have lifted thousands of pounds."
He stepped up to the mouth of the tunnel and peered over the edge.
"Ingenious. See how they placed this, just above this natural bulge in the face? Even in daylight, it would have been invisible from the water."
"I see it."
"Wow, look at this."
"Sam?"
"What?"
"I hate to stifle your imagination, but we've got a bottle of wine to steal."
"Right. Sorry. Let's go."
Having used Google Earth to draw up their own overhead sketch of Bondaruk's estate, complete with angles and distances, as well as annotations from Bohuslav's notes, they kept track of their steps as they headed into the tunnel. Under the moving beam of their flashlights, Sam could see signs of limited blast work along the walls, but it appeared most of the tunnel had been carved out the old-fashioned way, by hammer, chisel, and backbreaking labor. Here and there on the floor were wooden toolboxes, coils of half-rotted rope, rusted pickaxes and sledgehammers, a pair of half-rotted leather boots, canvas coveralls that partially disintegrated when Remy nudged them with her shoe. Attached to the right and left-hand walls every 10 feet were oil lamps, their glass globes black with soot, their bronze reservoirs and handles covered in a scabrous green patina. Sam tapped one with his index finger and heard sloshing inside.
After 50 yards of walking, Remy stopped, studied the sketch, and said, "We should be just under the outer wall. Another 100 yards or so, and we should be directly under the main house." She was off by only a few yards. After another 2 minutes, they reached a widened intersection, the tunnel and tracks continuing straight as well as to the right. 5 old-fashioned ore carts sat in a line against the left-hand wall, while a 6th sat on the north-south tracks.
"Straight ahead to the stables, and right to the east wings," Sam said.
"I think so." He checked his watch. "Let's check out the stables first and see what we can see." After another 30 minutes or so of walking, Remy stopped suddenly and placed her index finger to her lips and mouthed, "Music." They listened in silence for 10 seconds, then Sam leaned in and whispered in Remy's ear, "Summer Wind by Frank Sinatra." She nodded.
"I hear voices. Laughing. Singing along."
"Yeah." They continued on, and soon the tunnel came to a dead end at a set of stone steps leading upward to a wooden trapdoor. Sam lifted his head and sniffed.
"Manure. Then we're in the right place."
The music and laughter were louder now, seemingly coming from directly above their heads. Sam placed his foot on the lowermost step. At that moment, there came the thunk of a footfall on the trapdoor. Sam froze. Another foot joined the first, followed by 2 more, these lighter, somehow more delicate. Through the gaps in the trapdoor, shadows moved, blocking and unblocking the light. A woman giggled and said in Russian-accented English,
"Don't, Dmitri, that tickles."
"That's the idea, my Lapotchka."
"Ooh, I like that."
"Stop, stop, what about your wife?"
"What about her?"
"Come on, let's get back to the party before someone sees us."
"Not until you promise me," a man said.
"Yes, I promise. Next weekend in Balaclava."
The couple moved off, and moments later there came the banging of a wooden door. Somewhere above, a horse whinnied, then silence. Remy whispered,
"We've managed to stumble into one of Bondaruk's damned parties. Talk about bad luck."
"Maybe good luck," Sam replied. "Let's see if we can make it work for us."
"What do you mean?"
"Chances are decent that Bondaruk is the only one who knows what we look like."
"Oh, no, Sam." He grinned.
"Remy, where are your manners? Let's mingle." Once certain there was no one about, Sam climbed the steps, lifted open the hatch, and had a look around. He turned back to Remy.
"It's a closet. Come on."
He climbed up and held the hatch for Remy, then closed it behind her. Through the open closet door was another space, this one a tech room dimly lit by theater-style lights along the baseboards. They stepped through and out the opposite door and found themselves on a gravel alleyway bordered on both sides by horse stalls. Overhead was a high vaulted ceiling with inset exhaust fans and skylights through which pale moonlight filtered. They could hear horses snorting softly and shuffling in the stalls. At the far end of the stable, perhaps 30 yards away, was a set of double barn doors. They walked to them and peeked out. Before them lay an acre-sized expanse of lush lawn surrounded by chest-high hedges and flickering tiki torches. Multicolored silk banners fluttered on crosswires suspended over the lawn. Dozens of tuxedoed and evening-gowned guests, mostly couples, stood in clusters and strolled about, chatting and laughing. Waiters in stark white uniforms moved through the crowd, occasionally pausing to offer hors d'oeuvres and cocktails. The source of Sinatra's Summer Wind, pole-mounted loudspeakers strategically placed around the lawn, now emitted a soft jazz number. To Sam and Remy's right, they could see the upper floors of Bondaruk's mansion, its onion-domed minarets silhouetted against the dark sky. To the left, through an entrance gap in the hedges, Sam could see a gravel parking lot packed with several $1 million worth of Bentleys, Mercedeses, Lamborghinis, and Maybachs.
"We're underdressed," Remy muttered.
"Severely," Sam agreed. "I don't see him, do you?" Remy moved closer to the gap and scanned the throng. No, but with the torchlight, it's hard to tell.
Sam shut the door. Let's go check out the southeast wing. They went back through the tack room trapdoor, retraced their steps down the tunnel, and took the east branch. Almost immediately, they found side tunnels spaced at 20 to 30 foot intervals along the north wall. Storage chambers and other exits, Sam said. Remy nodded, shining her flashlight on her sketch.
Bohuslav has these marked, but there's no description of where they go.
They shined their flashlights into the darkness, but could see nothing past 10 feet. Somewhere in the distance, they could hear wind whistling.
I don't know about you, but I vote we avoid another dungeon-like maze if we can.
Amen.
They kept walking and after a few hundred yards found themselves standing before another set of stone steps. This time Remy took the lead, crouching beneath the trapdoor and listening until certain the way was clear. She lifted the hatch, peeked out, then ducked back down again.
It's pitch dark. I can't tell where we are.
Let's go up. We'll see if our eyes adjust. Remy climbed through the hatch, then stepped aside so Sam could join her. He eased the hatch shut and carefully reached out, trying to measure the space. It was roughly 4 by 4 feet square. After 30 seconds of standing still, their eyes slowly began to adjust, and they could make out a thin rectangle of light to their left. Sam crept to the wall and pressed his eye to the gap. He pulled back, frowned, then looked again.
What?
Remy asked.
Books,
he whispered.
It's a bookshelf.
He felt along the wall and found a recessed wooden latch. He lifted it up, placed his palm against the wall, and gently pushed. Soundlessly, the wall swung away from them on hidden hinges, revealing a foot-wide gap. Sam stepped into it and leaned out. He jerked his head back and had no sooner swung the bookcase shut again when a man's voice said, "Olga, is that you?" Footsteps padded across a rug, paused, then padded in another direction. "Olga?" Silence for a few seconds, then the sound of water running. The water shut off. Footsteps again, then a door opening and shutting. Sam pushed the bookcase open again and peeked out.
"All clear," he whispered to Remy.
Together they stepped out and shut the bookcase behind them. They were in a bedroom. Measuring 20 feet on a side with an adjoining bathroom, the space was furnished in heavy walnut furniture, a massive 4-poster bed, and well-worn, expensive Turkish rugs.
"What now?" Remy asked.
Sam shrugged. "Let's spruce up and join the festivities."